Consider the following sobering statistic. Of the 500 largest U.S. companies in 1957, only 74 were still part of that select group, the Standard & Poor's 500, 40 years later. Only a few had disappeared in mergers. The rest either shrank or went bust. Interestingly, almost all these large corporations were located in the most capitalist country on earth, the United States. The more socialist a country's orientation, the easier it was for the large corporate monsters to stick around. Why did capitalism and not socialism destroy these ogres? In other words, if you leave companies alone, they tend to get eaten up. Those in favor of economic freedom claim that beastly and greedy corporations pose no threat because competition keeps them in check. What I saw at the Wharton School convinced me that the real reason includes a large share of something else: chance. But when people discuss chance, which they rarely do, they usually only look at their own luck. The luck of others counts greatly. Another corporation may luck out thanks to a blockbuster product and displace the current winners. Capitalism is, among other things, the revitalization of the world thanks to the opportunity to be lucky. Luck is the grand equalizer, because almost everyone can benefit from it. The socialist governments protected their monsters and, by doing so, killed potential newcomers in the womb. Everything is transitory. Luck both made and unmade Carthage. It both made and unmade Rome. I said earlier that randomness is bad, but it isn't always so. Luck is far more egalitarian than even intelligence. If people were rewarded strictly according to their abilities, things would still be unfair. People don't choose their abilities. Randomness has the beneficial effect of reshuffling society's cards, knocking down the big guy. In the arts, fads do the same job. A newcomer may benefit from a fad, as followers multiply thanks to a preferential attachment style epidemic. Then guess what? He too becomes history. It's quite interesting to look at the acclaimed authors of a particular era and see how many have dropped out of consciousness. It even happens in countries such as France, where the government supports established reputations, just as it supports ailing large companies. When I visit Beirut, I often spot in relatives' homes the remnants of a series of distinctively white leather-bound Nobel books. Some hyperactive salesman once managed to populate private libraries with these beautifully made volumes. Many people buy books for decorative purposes and want a simple selection criterion. The criterion this series offered was one book by a Nobel winner in literature every year, a simple way to build the ultimate library. The series was supposed to be updated every year, but I presume the company went out of business in the 80s. I feel a pang every time I look at these volumes. Do you hear much today about Sully Poudon, the first recipient? Pearl Buck, an American woman? Romain Rolland, Anatole France. The last two were the most famous French authors of their generations. St. John Peirce, Roger Martin de Gare, or Frédéric Mistral,